Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to The Learning Curve on Radio Islam International. The name is Noman Panchbaya and I've got with me my co-host Hafiz Hanzala Hafiji. And yes, as you all know, during the 21-day lockdown period, inshallah, we're going to be keeping you company from 3 to 4pm. And on a daily basis, we're going to be having different subject experts, inshallah, and they're going to be answering questions with regards to maybe something that you might be having difficulty understanding in a specific subject. Hafiz, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Noman.
Hope you are keeping well and all ready for physical science as well as chemistry today.
Yeah, alhamdulillah, I'm keeping well and definitely looking forward to this afternoon. You know, inshallah, we're going to be very shortly getting hold of our guest who will be joining us for the science segment this afternoon.
Yes, definitely, inshallah, we're going to be having Mr. Kota, and that's Brother Abdul Qadir Kota, and he's a science expert, and inshallah, he's going to be sending some informative points through to us. So, before we even get our expert on, we would like to request you, inshallah, those that are listening in, maybe you're in grade 10, 11 or 12, and you're listening in at the moment, you can send through your physical science or chemistry related questions on 0727861548. That is 0727861548. And inshallah, today we're going to be speaking all about physics and chemistry. And you can send through your questions and we will ask our subject educator, inshallah, to answer anything that's troubling you. You might be sitting at home working through past papers, you don't understand a specific concept. Yeah, send it through on WhatsApp 0727861548 and we will be asking them. Just to remind you, yesterday we had a maths expert on, and we're going to be having more practical sums, inshallah, from on maths from next week, Monday onwards. Today we have physical science. Tomorrow, inshallah, we'll be going to be doing life sciences. On Thursday, we're going to be doing geography, and on Friday, inshallah, we're going to be having one of the subjects also for you, inshallah. So we're going to be going for a quick break, inshallah. When we come back, we have for you the expert on the line. Stay tuned. Learning Curve on Radio Islam International online or on air tuition taking place right now, inshallah. And as we've mentioned just before the Nasheed break, that today we're going to be doing physical science as well as chemistry. So if you do have any questions related to that subject, inshallah, then you can WhatsApp us on 0727861548. Yes, on the line, we've got Mr. Kota, Brother Abdul Qadir Kota, joining us, and alhamdulillah, he's a science teacher, quite well acknowledged also, alhamdulillah, and with 30 years experience. Brother Abdul Qadir, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. We are glad to have you on Radio Islam International. Jazakallah for joining us on the program, and we're going to go straight into our segment. Brother Abdul Qadir, Jazakallah for making your time available. We just want to go ahead and go straight into the science topic with regards to physical science as well as chemistry, understanding that you have about 30 years experience or subject knowledge with regards to the content that comes to physical sciences. Tell us, when it comes to science as a subject in school, is practical knowledge as important as theoretical knowledge?
Well, practical knowledge is very important. I always use the phrase or the saying, they say, I hear and I forget. I see and I remember, and I do and I understand. So when you do something practically, that's the time the child understands. So the practical knowledge is very, very important. And this, in conjunction with the theory, helps the child tremendously. The problem is, obviously, you know, the educators have no time in the classroom to do practical work. And this causes a problem for the child. Secondly, most schools are ill-equipped with, you know, the laboratory equipment. They don't have sufficient equipment. Laboratories are not functional. The availability of water in the labs, the availability of gas. The teacher always suffers, you know. If he wants to do a practical, he's got to go through a whole host of things before he can actually perform an experiment. So these are the problems that we have. But, as I said, the practical aspect is of utmost importance. I mean, there are laboratories around here in Gauteng. Sure. Fully equipped laboratory. There are some that are fully equipped laboratory. And the equipment is not used by the teachers. So, this is another aspect that that we fail the child in, that those laboratories that have the equipment, the teachers don't use them sufficiently to give the child the practical knowledge the child needs.
Jay, very true. And, Brother Kota, if you look at it also, besides these types of challenges that educators face, you know, another challenge most of the time that educators constantly have to go through or have to always hear is, how does one overcome the phrase that, you know, I'm weak or I'm bad at science? You know, teachers are always asked, I find science to be difficult, I'm bad at it, I cannot manage with it. How do these, how does one overcome these types of phrases?
This type of phrase, you know, where the child or the parent says, my child cannot manage it, or my child is weak, or things like that. These are psychological acceptances in our society. It's psychological. There's no child who is bad in any subject, or particularly maths and science as well. It is purely based on what the attitude is. Some educators tend to run down the dreams of youth, that what you're talking about science, you know, they don't encourage children to take up the subject. The children are taught at school in the form of dictating notes.
True.
That's how they are taught. You'll find a child, open up a child's book, notebook.
Sure.
It's a copy of his textbook. Because all the notes that the textbook gives, the child just dictates it back onto the into the book. I've had a look at, we do tuition work on a 24-hour basis, virtually,
sure,
7 days a week. And we look at the different books, different teachers from different schools. The students bring their books along. And all I see is a whole host of notes. Mm. And the child doesn't understand a word what he's written there. So I do ask them, do you understand what you wrote, Jay? No, the teacher just dictates to us. So this is the type of... So this thing about bad... You know, the children are weak or something. It's all because they are not given the encouragement to think and to analyze their work. You know, when a child is given a topic, the teacher's got to analyze the whole topic and say, okay, how will this topic help the child in his life?
Mm.
He's never told that.
And I think coming with that phrase of being weak or bad at science actually starts off when someone is not what we would say used to the basics of science or the basics of physics, chemistry, and coming towards equations, etc. Mr. Kota, Mr. Abdulkadir Kota, you've been an expert. You've been in the teaching field for about 30 years. Maybe for the benefit of our listeners, before we do go into the questions that are coming through from our listeners with regards to the content itself, is there any specific way which is easy to remember physics as well as chemistry equations, understanding that in the exams they do get an equation sheet or a formula sheet, but they don't know where to start? So the question is in the question paper, of course, but the kid doesn't know which equation to use for which question. Is there a specific way to relate or make it such that it's easy for them to link concepts as well as equations?
Yes, you see. Okay, let's start at this point. When a grade 12 writes the exam, he's given a data sheet of all the formulas for each topic. Okay? He's got to use that. He's got to read the question and then apply the equation, the correct equation to answer the question. Mm. The problem is some of these pupils, I can promise you, they see the data sheet for the first time in their life when they're writing the exams.
True.
They are not even shown those data sheets. The data sheets got to be, in fact, I feel that teachers got to take time and do a special, say, two periods of just studying the data so that the child understands what is there and how he can use to answer his questions. Mm. I want to give you an example.
Sí.
All my life, I've been stressing on this particular aspect of chemistry, and that is the periodic table.
Mm.
Now, the periodic table is given to the child, but it is the most important table in the whole of chemistry.
Sí.
Yet the periodic table is not even mentioned. When I ask a child who comes to me and I said, where's your periodic table? He says, I don't know. It must be in my book or somewhere. They don't even know what is the significance of the periodic table. Now, how can you teach chemistry without a periodic table? This is my question.
Sí.
Look at their notes. Parents must look at the notes of their children.
Sí.
I'm telling you, the notes are pathetic. Look at them. Nothing there can assist the child in loving the subject.
Sí.
They do it as purely, you know, one of those subjects which we can sort the work.
Mm, yeah. And
so that is what I feel, you know, that they are not given the opportunity to utilize all this information that is given to them, such as the formulas and the data sheets. Some of them, you know, they're in the data sheet, they are given constants like Newton's universal constant, Coulomb's law constant. But the children don't even know that it is there.
Gee.
So when you ask them, what is the value for Newton's constant? They say, where do we find it? They don't know. So this is what the important thing is. Teach them how to utilize the formulas and apply it.
Yes.
I have three things to mention. Any child who looks at a problem, they must look at the problem as a beautiful apple. Don't take too many bites into the apple.
True.
Take little bites at a time and chew the question. So, what are the three things? Take down the data, number one.
Sí.
Number two, ask what is required of me in this question. And three, choose the correct equation. Those are the three important parts to answer a physical science question.
Brother Abdulkadir, if you can just repeat that one more time for the benefit of our listeners.
The three things.
Gee.
Number one, write down the data given in the question. All the information in the question, write it down.
Gee.
Don't leave it to your mind to remember. Okay. Take a piece of paper and all the information given to you, put it on a piece of paper.
Okay.
That's number one.
Gee.
Number two, you ask yourself the question. You as a student, you say, what do these people require from me?
Okay.
They need something from me. What do they want? Oh, they want the final velocity for instance, which is the equation I got to use. That's the third part.
Right.
You go now to your data. Your data sheet,
Gee.
And say, right, I need to find final velocity. Where is it in my data sheet? And you pick out your correct equation. So those are the three things which is very important to answer any question in physics and chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes it really easy for our listeners. Before we go for our break, I think we're going to take one message coming through. It says, Assalamu alaikum. Please, can Mr. Kota give us an easy way of getting the valence of a chemical just by looking at the periodic table? Would you be able to assist with an easy way?
What does he mean? Valence electrons or valency? There's two words.
Okay.
Valency is the number of electrons that an atom will either give or take. That is the valency.
Gee.
The valence electron is the number of electrons that are available in the outermost incomplete level. So if it's asking for valency, if the student is asking for valency, all you look at is your periodic table, look at the eight groups, and the eight groups gives you the valency. So group one is valency one, group two, valency two, group three is three, group four is an in-between, so it has a positive and a negative aspect to it. So it could be either way, but it's four.
Okay.
Group five becomes three valency, group six becomes two valency, and group seven becomes one, group eight, zero. So you just pick it up from your periodic table. And the groups are mentioned on the periodic table if you use the correct periodic table.
Gee.
We use the periodic table that is supplied by the Department of Education.
Gee.
And I insist that all the children must use that particular periodic table, because if you look at different periodic tables and then you find this periodic table appears in your exam, you don't know what to do with it.
Gee. Okay, so we've answered the valency part. If they want to know about the valence electron, is it a similar way?
Yes.
For a chemical?
If you look at the eight groups.
Gee.
Group one is one, group two is two valence electrons.
Right.
Group three is three, group four is four, group five is five, group six is six, group seven is seven. That's it.
Oh, okay, perfect. Excellent. Yeah, I think that's...
You just look at your periodic table and you pick it up from there.
Gee, definitely. I think that will make it easier for our listeners. So if you do have any physical science-related questions as well as chemistry-related questions, you can WhatsApp us on 072-786-1548. It is The Learning Curve on Radio Islam International. 28 minutes past the hour of 3. We're going to go for a quick break. When we come back, we have more questions and answers. Stay tuned. Learning Curve on Radio Islam International. And on the line, we have with us physical science as well as chemistry expert, Mr. Abdul Qadir Kota. And he's answering all your physical science and chemistry-related questions. Welcome back, Mr. Kota. We have a question here saying, Assalamu alaikum. In vertical projectile motion, how do you know how to interpret the graph of velocity versus time to find the displacement?
To find the displacement, first of all, if a graph is given to you, a velocity-time graph given to you, and from there, if you got to calculate the height, is that the question?
Gee, it says in a vertical projectile motion, how do you know how to interpret the velocity-time graph to find the displacement?
Okay, the velocity-time, to recognize the velocity-time graph, it's usually a straight line running from your vertical, your y-axis downwards, if you chose downwards as negative. So anyway, there's your graph running down. Now, any value below the graph, that will determine the height of the object.
Okay.
So in other words, you take your graph, which is a straight line graph running downwards, and the triangle below the graph will determine the height. In other words, a simple way to do it is just use what is area below a graph. Area is equal to half base times height, and you just find that. Find the area below the graph, and you get your height of the velocity time graph.
Okay, perfect. Hopefully that answers the question coming through on our WhatsApp. Another one coming through saying, the phenomenon that allows water strider to walk on water. They have four, what we would say, multiple choice. They don't know what's the correct one. They're working through a past paper. Is it capillarity? Is it adhesion? Is it evaporation or surface tension?
What was the question? What water?
The phenomenon that allows water strider to walk on water. Is it capillarity, adhesion, evaporation, or surface tension?
Surface to something that got to work on water will be the surface tension. You can only walk on the water provided that the forces that holds you upwards in the water are strong enough, and that is your surface area that will help you there.
Okay.
Answer is surface area. I would say your surface area is the answer to that question.
Okay, perfect. Another one coming through here on our WhatsApp. It says, the question says, what type of forces, interatomic or intermolecular, are involved in the following? So, a force that prevents ice cubes from adopting the shape of the container. Is it interatomic or intermolecular?
Okay, let's just use the two terms, interatomic and intermolecular.
Sure.
Intermolecular forces are forces between, let's say, two molecules of water. Okay, so you've got H2O molecule and another H2O molecule, and the attraction between these two molecules gives you intermolecular forces, right? The intramolecular forces, the second one is the intramolecular forces. These are forces that bind the hydrogen and the oxygen together to form the molecule, okay? So these are the two types of molecules, intra between atoms and inter between two molecules.
Okay, I think, that should answer that person's question.
What is that question again?
The same one. It says, what type of forces, is it interatomic or intermolecular, are involved in the following? Where forces that prevent ice cubes from adopting the shape of the container. Which one is it, interatomic or intermolecular?
I would say interatomic because the bond between the atoms are strong enough to prevent it from breaking up. So that is your intramolecular, the molecule, the forces between the two atoms of oxygen and hydrogen, the two different atoms.
Okay, perfect. Another one coming through saying, in organic chemistry, what's the easiest way to determine the homologous series or to remember them?
Okay, the homologous series, if you look at the matric syllabus, we go through about nine families, so to say, families, which we call functional groups.
Sure.
So the homologous series is a group of atoms that has similar molecular structures, okay?
Sure.
So to remember that, first of all, there's no other way. You know, organic chemistry, I've been teaching the subject, organic chemistry, for a long time.
Jay.
And organic chemistry, these are basics, the homologous series and the functional group. They're so important, you just got to swat it off and remember it. Like, giving you an example, the alkanes are part of the homologous series, okay? There's three of them, alkanes, alkenes, and alkynes. Those are three, just taking three basic homologous series. Now, how do you differentiate them? Number one, single bond, double bond, and triple bond. That's how you differentiate the three homologous series, the three molecules. Organic molecules. So this aspect of organic chemistry, I've got it. If anybody wants it, I've drawn up a table, a simple table. If they can send me their WhatsApp or a message
to you,
address, or to you, I can send them the table that I use as a simple way of remembering these homologous theories.
Okay, so before we go to our next question, maybe if you want to just mention your contact details on air, so for the benefit of those that do want that table that Mr. Kota has drawn up for physics.
All right. My WhatsApp number is 074-333-8381. Just to repeat that, 074-333-8381. And my email address is Abdul Kota, Abdul spelled with ABDOOL, abdulkota@gmail.com.
Okay, Jazakallah for that. So for the benefit of the listeners, 074-333-8381. And the email address is abdulkota@gmail.com. And you can get in touch with Mr. Kota, inshallah. He will be forwarding you that table, which will assist you, inshallah, to understand organic chemistry and to make it easier for you. We're going to go through to our next question. Hafiz Hanzala will be asking you that question.
So the next question that has come through, it says, define the term bond energy.
Okay. The bond energy, when two atoms approach each other. Now, remember, when bonding takes place, let's take an atom of hydrogen and another atom of hydrogen. And when they approach each other, where bonding is supposed to take place, first of all, these two atoms has got to... There's certain criteria before they will bond. So those got to be met first, like ionization energy, electronegativity, atomic radius, and those things, which you learn in grade 10.
Sure.
Once those criteria are met, the two atoms are now ready to form the bond. Now, when this bond takes place, a certain amount of potential energy is taken up.
Mm.
And when this energy is taken up by this bond, it is very difficult to just break it again. Now, that's bond energy. Bond energy, to define it, is the energy required to break a bond. That's the definition.
Sure. Okay, yeah, that's...
I'd like to just bring you through this definition part of physics and chemistry. A matric student should be knowing roughly about 90 definition for the entire syllabus. Okay, And they are given these definition. They are in the textbooks and. Teachers roll them off and they give it to the students or learners.
Sure.
The learners swat them off, not even knowing what it means. I'm telling you the truth.
Sure.
So what is the purpose of the definition? The definition should tell you what you're about to do.
Mm.
So, giving you an example, if you're talking of momentum, what is the definition of conservation of momentum? The definition is, in an isolated system, total linear momentum must be conserved. You tell the child, right, you read it, now tell me what does it mean?
What does it mean?
Doesn't know what it means. They don't know what it means to conserve. They don't know the word linear. You ask them, what is linear? They say, no, we don't know what is linear. I'm telling you the truth. This is how the information I get from my students.
Sí.
What should be done is that teachers must explain the definition. To define something, it's very easy. I can swap something off and I can give you the definition, which I gave you 2 minutes ago.
Right.
But to explain that definition, that is required to answer the question in the paper.
Jazakallah so much for that, Mr. Kota, Mr. Abdul Qadir Kota, for joining us on the program. Really, it's been very informative for the benefit of our listeners and our students that have been following us. And there's quite a bit of questions that have come through, but we just want to remind them that inshallah, Mr. Kota will be joining us next week, Tuesday again. And he will be assisting us, inshallah, with all your different physics as well as chemistry related questions. Mr. Kota, alhamdulillah, you've made it so much easier for our listeners. There's so many questions that have come through on our WhatsApp, but we will be taking it over to next week, Tuesday, when we have you back on the program. Jazakallah so much for your time.
Jazakallah, and it was a pleasure being here. Can I just say something
quickly
before we go off? I have, the department has rolled or got on the app, on its website, past papers from every, province of South Africa.
Okay.
There's 1,000 pages on physics and 1,000 pages on chemistry.
Okay.
Now, this is beneficial to these matriculants. They need these past papers.
Right.
If they want it, I've got the app. Just let me know. I'll send it down to them.
Okay, perfect.
I'll send all the papers to them.
Inshallah, that will really assist the learners, inshallah. And we will be mentioning your contact details out on air. Jazakallah once again, inshallah. Mr. Kota, we hope to speak to you next week, Tuesday, inshallah, for another physics and chemistry lesson.
Inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, that was Mr. Abdul Qadir Kota joining us on the Learning Curve on Radio Islam International. Really informative and, yes, much appreciated by our listeners. Those that have sent through the questions, remember, it's not gone down the drain, but we will be taking it over to next week, Tuesday, understanding that every day we'll be having a different subject, inshallah. Just for the benefit of the listeners, Mr. Kota's number 074-333-8381, and you can WhatsApp him, inshallah, and he will be forwarding to you all the different resources that you do require as you study and prepare while in lockdown. The time is just gone 46 minutes past the hour of 3. When we come back after this break, inshallah, we're going to be doing the career guidance segment on the Learning Curve. Stay tuned. Yes, the career guidance segment on the Learning Curve on Radio Islam International, and understanding those that were following us yesterday, we had Hafiz Muhammad Saud Behma joining us and telling us more about civil engineering. And you might be maybe sometimes thinking, what should I study? This is my chance to now ponder and say, you know what career path am I going to take? Today we're going to be going through into the medical field, and on the line we have Dr. Aisha Mullah, who studied Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery at the University of Advaitusran, and alhamdulillah, she's at the moment going through a first year intern at the Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital. Dr. Aisha Mullah, Jazakallah for your time on Radio Islam. Assalamu alaikum and welcome.
Wa alaikum salam. Jazakallah for having me, Noman.
Okay, so we're going to go straight into the course itself. I don't know if you want to just give us a brief explanation of what the whole course is about. I think known as medicine, if I would say it in layman's term.
No, definitely known as medicine. officially called Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery.
Che.
So it's a 6-year course if you come straight from matric. So you have your first year, which builds on your matric subjects like bio, physics, chemistry. Then you do subjects like psychology. Then you have your second year, which gets increasingly difficult because you do subjects like anatomy, which requires memorization, and subjects like physiology, which is about the body processes, which requires understanding. Mm. So it's this combination of trying to understand and memorize at the same time. Then you do your third and fourth year, which look at all the systems in the body and how they work and what can go wrong, like, for example, your neurological system or your reproductive system. Then your fifth and sixth year are your clinical years, which is spent in hospital. So you rotate through each rotation, like surgery or obstetrics and gynae, and then you learn how to diagnose and manage conditions from there. So that's if you went straight from matric.
Sure.
Otherwise, you can go via the graduate entry medical program, where you previously done a bachelor's degree, and then you come into third and fourth year. So you don't do the first and second years.
Okay, I hope that clears it out for our listeners. Now, as you've mentioned that it's a six-year course, and just to clarify, how many years intern do you have to do before you can, what we would say, specialize in a specific field?
So you study for 6 years, then you do your 2 years of internship where you're still learning and you're still training at a government hospital. Then you do 1 year of community service, which is an additional year where you're still working for the government. Then to specialize, you also specialize in government. So if you get a post to specialize straight away, it takes another 4 years minimum. So that's after your 2 years internship and 1 year community service.
Sister, you know, you look at this career, a lot of people want to do it, but uncertain of what it exactly entails or what it has to offer. If you can give our listeners a clear indication of what is a typical working day like in this career, and also what are your working hours like?
So I can tell you about my day as an intern.
Sure.
So you're required to be there early, usually before 7. So before your senior doctors, you see your patients, you get all your results up to date. You then see them together with one of your senior doctors and you create a management plan. And then you go to where you allocate it for the day, whether it's clinic or theater or whether you're admitting patients on that day.
Right.
And that's the really nice thing, is that no 2 days are the same. So then you draw on all the knowledge and skills you've gained and you put them together in order to make a diagnosis and to treat your patients. But at the same time, you have to be able to offer support and care and reassurance
right.
to people who are sick and anxious and alleviate their pain. So you end up finishing every day at around 5 o'clock, and that depends if you're not on call.
Sure.
So if you're on call, you'll continue the next morning. Like today, I'm actually post-call, and I left hospital today at 12 o'clock, and I was there from yesterday.
Sure. So that means like almost, we would say, 36 hours, or if just under that.
Mm.
So it just depends, different blocks. Sometimes you'll do 16 hours, sometimes you'll do 30 hours. It just depends on which shift you're on for that day.
Okay, and as we said that, you know, if you would ask any matriculant, you ask someone that's in grade 11, someone that's just completing grade 9 and they need to do subject choices, and you ask them, what do you want to do? And then they're like, I want to become a doctor. But then in that, again, that they need to know there's so much of effort that needs to be put in. Prior to that, as you were mentioning that you need specific school subjects, what are the compulsory subjects that one needs to have so that they can get entry into the medical field?
So the subjects I found that are most beneficial, obviously different universities have different requirements, but the ones that are most beneficial are subjects like physics, bio, and math. And you have to do very well in your languages as well, because you have to be able to communicate. So you'll notice on the entry requirements, medicine has one of the highest APS scores. So the thing about medicine is, once you've chosen these subjects, you don't need just A's. You need strong A's, because an 80% is an A and a 95% is also an A. And because it's so competitive,
Gee.
You need to have very strong A's and you need to do very well on your NBTs as well.
You know, we would also like to know from you, when it comes to the Bachelor of Medicine and the surgery field, what's the scope like? You know, is there a big demand for this? Is it growing? Also, you know, what's a good field to actually consider in this medical field to go into?
So there's always going to be a scope for doctors, because people are unfortunately always going to fall ill. So whether you become a GP or whether you choose to specialize in a field which will make you more in demand, so it just depends on what appeals to you, and that depends on what you decide to specialize in once you go into, because all specialists are in demand, whether it's a person who's a gynae or whether it's a person who's a neurologist or even a GP, all the different fields of medicine are in demand.
And maybe for the benefit of our listeners, Dr. Aisha Mullah, you want to let us know maybe what you would love to specialize in once your intern years are completed?
So I'm actually using my intern years to try and figure that out. I feel like once I'm at the end of my internship, that I'll have a more clearer picture, because I would have gone through each field.
Okay.
But there are things so far that I have liked more than others. Things like obstetrics, things like pediatrics, those are things that, and even becoming a physician, those are things that have appealed to me so far. So it just depends, inshallah, what plan Allah has for me, and what happens at the end of internship and at the end of community service.
Okay, Jay, and just a quick question. I don't know if you would be able to assist our listeners with this. As you've mentioned, that the scope is big, and you know that in the past there wasn't so many doctors, but also at the same time there wasn't so many diseases or there wasn't so many people that were getting sick. In today's time, there's so many doctors, but still the amount of patients are even increasing. Why is there a limit that is put when it comes to university entrance?
So university can only have so many students. For example, you can have 300 students, and that's because that's the amount they can accommodate to train. And it's not only the amount a university can handle, it's the amount. See, when you come out of med school, government has to be able to give you an intern post. So because interns are very costly to government, they need to have a certain number of posts available. So also the number of people a med school takes depends on the number of people internship will be able to be offered to.
Okay, yeah, that really makes sense. Just to end off, as we've been doing even yesterday, we did, when it comes to talking about money, what would be like the starting salary when it comes to someone maybe doing a normal, what we would say, you're doing the Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery and then specializing in something. What would be the average starting salary for someone that's qualified in this field?
So I can't tell you about the salary of the specialist, but I can tell you about the salary of an intern.
Okay.
So if you come fresh out of med school, in your first month immediately out of med school, you're paid by government.
Okay.
So before you earn overtime and after tax, your salary is about $32,000. And then you do overtime, that's all the calls and extra hours you do, and that's an additional $8,000 to $9,000 there.
Okay, when you mentioned that, then our whole studio's eyes lit up. They were like, you know what, we should have gone into Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery. But of course, that comes after so much of effort, so much of long hours. You have days where you're just like so, what we would say, tired and you're drained and, you know, you don't know what to do, even though you might have the money. But at that moment, you just need to like put your head down and say, you know what, I need this time to what we would say, come back to my senses after seeing what's going on in the hospitals.
No, definitely. You have to be a very certain kind of person. You have to be able to give up a lot, and you have to be very hardworking and driven, because there'll be times when you have to give up on family events. There'll be times when you'll be there late at night. So you have to be a very certain type of person. You have to be hardworking, you have to be driven, you have to be flexible, and you also have to be very passionate and caring, because at the end of the day, that's what will drive you to continue.
And I think that should become the motto of every individual, that, you know what, you need to be someone that wants to achieve such and such and do and wants to do such and such for specific individuals. Jazakallah so much for your time, Dr. Aisha Mulla. Really, we appreciate the feedback, the information that you've given. And inshallah, through that, it will clear up misconceptions. It will clear up whatever questions that our learners, our students have, and it will assist them, inshallah.
Jazakallah so much for having me.
Assalamu alaikum. There was Dr. Aisha Mulla, who studied Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery at the University of Advaitusran and at the moment going through her first year intern at the Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital. Hafiz Hanzala, if you're doing it for the money, then 32,000 after tax. And then if you put extra hours in, would you sleep in the hospital?
You know, the thing is, like you said, if you're doing it for the money, then you're not going to look at where you're sleeping. You're only going to be dreaming of money.
Yeah, but I think you have to do it with a passion.
100%.
Don't go in for the money.
No, most definitely. And remember, you know, after all, you're carrying out such a good or noble work, because, you know, you're taking care of people, or you're serving people. And I don't think there can be more better satisfaction or bringing you happiness knowing the fact that, it's something good.
Definitely, indeed. It is a learning curve on Radio Islam International. It's been awesome being in your company, and inshallah, we hope to be with you tomorrow, 3 to 4, inshallah. Remember, tomorrow we're going to be having a life science lesson, and if you have any questions with regards to life sciences in the FET phase, then you can WhatsApp us on 0727861548. Not as yet, but inshallah, tomorrow when the program does commence, so that we do have track of that. Also, if you do want us to, speak about a specific career or get someone in a specific career, then you can WhatsApp us as well. And inshallah, we will try and get an expert or someone that has completed their studies and will tell us more information of what the requirements are. For myself, Numan Panjwaya, as well as Hafiz Hanzala Hafiji, it's been awesome being in your company. Brother Ziyad, Jazakallah to you as well. Till tomorrow, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum. And just a reminder, next up, Youth Talk with Brother Tufail Patel and Brother Hussein Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.